Hello, this is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Leslie Hunt, bringing you this episode of Southern Living Magazine from the April 2026 issue. In today's program, we will read articles on Easter gatherings, reflections of past gatherings, spring arrangements for flowers and settings for that, Craig's Guide to Columbia, which is very interesting, and my favorite, The Grumpy Gardener. So if you're ready, let's get going. My first article is entitled Host with the Most Interior Designer and Floral Enthusiast, James Farmer, reflects on Easter gatherings, steel magnolias, and his secrets for spring arrangements. My favorite movie is Steel Magnolias. The end scene of the film takes place at an Easter egg hunt, resplendent with children in their finery and adults serving punch, all while a grown man is dressed up as a giant bunny who later rides on the back of a motorcycle. What could say Easter in the South like azaleas blooming, grand dames handing out refreshments at a picnic, and a holiday mascot speeding off on a revved-up bike? It's a wonderful dichotomy, as much of the South is, of complements and juxtapositions that simply work together to create our culture's hallmark of hospitality and eccentricity. The movie actually begins and ends with Easter, from dying and crushing dozens of eggs to the final featuring a motorcycle-hopping rabbit. I love how the bookends of this film are springy, jovial events. One of the best lines is when the iconic Clarie Belcher says to little Jack Jr., "Now it's almost time for the Easter Bunny, and now it's also time for me, Brubs," which is my familial nickname, to serve as the Easter Bunny, chef, and host. While I always wanted to be like the poised and planned Clarie, I have realized that as I age in wisdom and hopefully with a little grace, I'm much more in line with Farmer enjoys hosting at Farmdale, his home in Perry, Georgia. The grumpy oyster Brodeau holidays seem to bring out the best and worst in me as a host. I have all the aspirations to be a Clarie, much like my own dear grandmother Mimi. She was assuring and confident to set out to, quote, keep the feast, end quote, as we say at my church, with her authentic love for each and every person she met. Mimi taught me that we eat with our eyes first, and that setting a table is an honor. She also told me that we feed people body and soul in our homes. At my church, during the season of Lent, the Alleluia is omitted in the liturgy and then reintroduced at Easter, and I love that symbolism. The solemnity awaiting celebration is truly beautiful. For me, it's a renewal of life, complete with all the finery of a southern spring, dogwoods, azaleas, green grass, and a light dusting of yellow pine pollen. So when I find myself turning into Oyster and not Clarie, more Lenten than joyful, I try to channel my Mimi. I have to remember that though she is no longer cooking the ham and dyeing the Easter eggs with me, I now have the privilege of feeding people around my own table. She instilled in me that confidence is the best dish you can serve. Now that I am often the host during the holidays, I am the one inviting the generations to the meal. I do so assuredly and believe in being unapologetic with my tablescapes, mixing things more than matching them, and never thinking twice about using an incomplete set of Francis I, Strasburg, or Buttercup. I actually like to combine silverware patterns, mine, Mama's, and Mimi's. In turn, I'm serving a sort of dinner on the grounds with and for my family, a feast to be kept and an alleluia to be said. So here's an example of a creation of a centerpiece-worthy display. I often choose a bowl as the container. The first arrangement is brimming with garden roses in various shades of peach, pink, and creamy yellow. Start by making a, quote, nest, end quote, of greenery, and then filling that with, quote, eggs, end quote, clusters of flowers in a low mound. For texture, fill in the gaps with smaller buds like chamomile blooms, the butterflies, if you will, of the garden. Fresh mint adds both beauty and scent as the greenery. It's a lovely design for a round table or can be duplicated to extend down a longer one. Make it a showstopper. For an entryway or buffet, I love to opt for a tulipier vessel, which is a bit like a paint-by-numbers for floral arranging. These ceramic pieces are attractive on their own, but when brimming with peonies, roses, and punchy hypericum berries, they become a highlight of the season. Cut some stems, arrange them in the tulipier, tucking the larger, bolder blossoms in the lower two-thirds, and then placing greens and filler at the top and throughout. And voila, you have a beautiful display that Clary, My Mimi, or even Oyster would celebrate. End of story. Our next article is entitled Craig's Guide to Columbia. When the Today anchor heads to his South Carolina hometown, here's where you can find him. For Craig Melvin, time spent in, quote, God's country, end quote, as he calls it, revolves around family, but there are a few local haunts he likes to frequent, too. Lizard's Thicket on Broad River Road is definitely at the top of the list, he says, of the classic Meat and Three featuring country cooking. It's where, many years ago, I took my now wife, then girlfriend, to first introduce her to my family. The regional chain has been a community staple since 1977, but the true hidden gem and his mom, Betty Jo's, pick is at Brooklyn Baptist Church. It sounds strange, perhaps, but there's a lunch buffet at our church. Everything is phenomenal and tastes like a good home-cooked meal, says Craig. It's open 5 days a week, and the menu rotates, but always consists of comforting dishes like collard greens, fried chicken and catfish, candied yams, and cornbread. After the Sunday service is obviously the busiest time, but if you go on a Wednesday, you'll see everyone from business leaders to state reps sitting in there, he says. The Chicken Man is another Soda City secret. Folk artist Ernest Lee, who earned the nickname due to his primary subject, is a local legend you can typically find on the corner of Gervais and Oak Streets. I often buy a piece to add to my collection or give as a gift, notes Craig. The journalist says the best excursions with the kids in tow are Adventure Columbia, the South Carolina State Museum, the Riverbank Zoo and Garden, and Finlay Park. It's been cool as some who grew up in Columbia to watch it evolve, he says. Every time I go back, I'm struck by how much it has changed. Craig's picks include several items. Here are four of his can't-miss spots whenever he's in town. Bourbon, this Cajun Creole restaurant and whiskey bar in the heart of downtown, is a must for Craig and his brother Ryan. I've known Christian Niemi, the owner, for over a decade, he says. It's got great food and, more importantly, a fantastic bourbon selection. City Limits Barbecue. Open only on weekends, this Carolina and Texas-style joint puts a new spin on traditional techniques. It's one of those places where you show up and there's a long line. They don't take reservations, and they always sell out of something, notes Craig. Another location is Zesto of West Columbia. With a larger-than-life ice cream cone out front, the restaurant, which has offered burgers, fried chicken, and soft serve for over 75 years, was a childhood favorite. It's got all the things you're not supposed to eat, but they're just too good not to, says Craig, whose kids now love it too. Last but not least is Sheely's Barbecue. Farther down the road, in Batesville, Berg, Leesville, this iconic establishment, founded in 1969, is known for its all-you-can-eat buffet and is well worth the trip. It was the go-to place when I was growing up, he says, and that is the end of the story. Our next article is entitled Best Boil in the World. You don't stumble upon Hawk's Crawfish Restaurant. You go looking for it. This was written by Alana Al-Haitlanani. Rain Louisiana. Many Louisiana eateries are described as off the beaten path, but few are as remote as Hawk's Crawfish Restaurant in Rain. To get here, you have to drive past miles of lush marsh before turning onto a densely tree-lined stretch where no street lamps and few other cars are found. This is Hawk's Road, a meandering path you have to trust ends with the best crawfish and Cajun counter. Don't be tempted to take an earlier exit, even though signs along I-10 will boast the finest boils in the state. Wait it out. You'll know you've arrived when you see a long rambler-style building featuring a door painted with a giant red crawfish. Depending on the day, a line of hungry people might be trickling out. Inside, the walls are covered up with corrugated metal and neon beer signs. Crawfish traps hang from the ceiling. The floors hint at several expansions with mismatched tiles marking years gone by between renovations. Anthony Arenaso, who owns the spot, with his wife Jennifer, circles the room in a white cowboy hat, shaking hands like a presidential candidate. He bobs from the bar anchored in the front corner of the establishment, so the 182-seat dining room. A lot of guests are repeat customers. One group mentions that it's their third time here this spring, and they're squeezing in another visit before the restaurant shuts down in late May or early June. Hawk's is open only during crawfish season, a short but busy period starting in either February or March that generates enough revenue to carry the couple through the remainder of the year. These crustaceans can be harvested as early as November, but holding off until later in the season gives them more time to grow bigger and plumper. We start when crawfish are really good, and we stop before they get bad, says Anthony. Although he looks like a cattle rancher, make no mistake, Anthony is a mudbuck expert and began catching them as a teenager. In 1978, at 15 years old, I was emancipated so I could borrow money and start crawfishing, he said. I borrowed a lot. At that time, it was scary. The market for crawfish wasn't what it is today either. It was just local people that ate them. Now the whole country eats them, but back then I sold huge ones by the truckload for 17 cents a pound and couldn't get rid of all of them, he recalls. The restaurant came later in 1983 when his late father, Luther Henry Hawk Arsenault, suggested using a building he owned as a spot to serve the shellfish. From day one, we were packed, he said. It was unbelievable. Long, long lines. We would close at 10 p.m., but a lot of the time, at 1 in the morning, we were still going. Customers continued to come in droves. Over 50,000 Facebook followers eagerly await the post announcing when it'll reopen each spring, and for the first 6 weeks, it's back in business. There are often lines that curl through the gravel parking lot out to the road. Even as an average night, countless shallow, round trays filled with pounds of steaming crawfish stream out of the kitchen to patrons ready to pick them apart one by one. The fork and knife crowd can enjoy the étouffée loaded with tender tails in a peppery gravy, though it also comes with a few whole ones to dismantle, each larger than the accompanying dinner roll. Every table is stocked with the house dipping sauce, Tabasco, and Tony Chachere's, but try to sample at least one crawfish plain to taste the mild, almost sweet meat on its own. Most visits to Hawk's end with Jennifer's bread pudding, a family recipe served piping hot in a pool of sticky sauce. Part of what distinguishes Hawk's from other purveyors in Acadiana is how the crawfish are cleaned. At a lot of spots, the prep work entails only soaking the crustaceans in salt water for about an hour before cooking. But Anthony uses a technique developed at Texas A&M University where the mud bugs sit in vats of aerated water, imagine a rolling boil, but cold, and aren't fed for up to 48 hours before being cooked, resulting in a grit-free meat. A small crew is dedicated to the intricate cleaning process. Their shifts begin at 6:30 a.m. and sometimes don't wrap up until 5 p.m., just as the restaurant is opening. This attention to detail means a higher price tag, but diners are happy to pay a little extra. A map near the cash register started a few seasons back is dotted with pins marking all the places folks have traveled from. Every state except Rhode Island is represented for now, and some have come from as far away as Japan. Anthony says one of the regulars, a Texas family with their own plane, flies into the nearby airport, dines, and then heads back home. I told my wife when I grow up, that's what I want to have, my own jet just to fly out of state to go eat, he jokes. The staff are as loyal as the patrons. Many are multi-generational servers, the children of past current employees. It's the first job for some, teenagers who are eager to make money before the summer. All of them are ready to walk crawfish novices through the careful art of twisting off the tails, and they won't shame you if you're not yet willing to suck the heads in public. After more than 40 years, Anthony says retirement is on the horizon. He won't hand off the reins to just anybody, though. If the right person comes along, I'll teach them everything they need to know, he says. In the meantime, he'll be here from 9 a.m. until close each day for the duration of the crawfish season. It's been good to us, he said, of the business. It's a golden opportunity. End of story. You are listening to Southern Living on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Leslie Hunt. Our next article is entitled, The Grumpy Gardener. Dear Grumpy, in Northern Virginia, our typical soil is red clay. For years, I've been spreading coffee grounds in our garden on the premise that it helps break up and improve the soil. Well, my wonderful son and his wife, who are avid gardeners, recently moved back here from San Diego, California, and reject my strategy. They say that they don't want a bunch of caffeinated worms in their yard. My question to you, Grumpy, is who stands on the better ground here, Jim? Grumpy's answer, you do, Jimbo. Coffee grounds, especially composted ones, are great for the soil and make a good source of organic matter. Unless you pile them 3 feet thick, don't worry about the caffeine. Most of that goes into the glorious liquid you drink. That's lucky, as the last thing you need is twitchy soil that won't stay still. The next piece, hosta la vista. Are there any hostas that will tolerate the heat in a shade garden in North Florida? Amy. Life is short for most hostas in your USDA Zone 9A. They need a longer, colder winter than what North Florida provides. Fortunately, there are still a number of heat-tolerant ones available for folks in the Deep South. As a bonus, they have showy flowers thanks to their parentage from fragrant plantain lily, Hosta plantagenia, which is native to warmer parts of China. Grumpy recommends cathedral windows, fragrant bouquet, guacamole, royal standard, stained glass, honeybells, and Old Faithful. A good online source for them is plantdelights.com. Next question, go for it. I'm trying to transplant a rose bush, and its roots have gone under the sidewalk. Will it survive if I cut the roots? Kathleen. His answer, well, there's only one way to find out. Next question, keeping it together. I live close to Hagerstown, Maryland, and have a redbud tree that split down the middle during a storm. Both sides are still alive. Is there a way to secure these halves so that they'll grow together as one trunk? Patricia. His response, absolutely. If the tree is small, pull together the halves so the bark on each side meets that of the other. Then wrap the affected section of the trunk with grafting tape. You can get this from Amazon. If the halves are too large and heavy for tape alone, pull them together. Drill a hole through them, insert a screw with washers at each end, securing them with nuts, and then wrap the area. I did this some years ago with a split Japanese maple. It healed so well you can't see the scar. Next question, balcony plants. Hi, Grumpy. We live in an apartment in downtown Greenville, South Carolina. Our double balcony gets full sun on both sides. What trailing plants for pots and hanging baskets can you recommend? Oma. His reply, you have lots of options to choose from. Take a look at Lantana. sweet potato vine, variegated ivy, fan flower, calibracola, silver falls, dichondra, cascade ivy geranium, licorice plant, homestead purple verbena, and trailing petunia, sun coleus, angelona, and periwinkle. Quite a good list, if I do say so myself. Next question, Murder, She Wrote. The question is, how do I trim a Nadina? My neighbor murders hers like she does her crepe myrtle, Joyce. Oh my heavens, why must some gardeners resort to such unspeakable cruelty? Thank you for opting out. Nadina consists of multiple woody stalks growing upright from the base. Use pruning shears or loppers, never hedge trimmers, to shorten them to slightly different heights to avoid a flat top. If you can, cut back each to just above a leaf. Otherwise, prune it back to the height that you desire and then let the stalk leaf out from there. Next, Grumpy's Gripe of the Month. Too many people wait for the fall to show Japanese maples some love. They're oblivious to the fact that spring's colors can match autumn's and even outshine them. Newborn leaves in the crisp April air offer shades of crimson, orange, pink, and gold. These hues are more dependable than those in the fall and last longer, too. And have you ever noticed the vernal flowers? My Ozakazuki Japanese maple marries fresh mint leaves with sprays of tiny red blossoms. So open your eyes, people. Japanese maples aren't just for autumn. Next, Rose Hope. Many of the knockout roses in our area are dying from the rose rosette disease. Are there any shrub types that are resistant? Carrie. Rose rosette is a terrible viral disease that's spread by tiny mites. It causes clusters of bright red shoots and distorted flowers on bushes like knockout. Infected plants will slowly die. However, a new shrub rose called Top Gun shows surprising resistance to rosette and other diseases. Growing 3 to 4 feet tall and wide, it features deep red flowers with bright yellow stamens from spring into fall. No doubt other colors are in the offing. Keep an eye out for them at your local nursery. Pruning lilacs. When should I prune my lilac bushes? After 7 years, I finally had wonderful blooms this spring and don't want to mess that up. Julie. Lilacs and other spring flowering shrubs bloom on growth made the previous year, so the best time to prune is right after they finish their seasonal show. This gives them plenty of time to make new buds for next year. If you trim them in fall or winter, you'll cut off the buds and mess up royally. Ask the Grump. No question goes unanswered on his Facebook page, facebook.com/SLGRUMPYGARDENER. Know your plants? Kosa dogwood. How many times have you heard that native plants are better adapted and easier to grow? That is not the case with dogwood trees. Southerners may find our indigenous flowering dogwood, Cornus florida, problematic due to disease and soil issues. Not so with Kosa dogwood, see Kosa, K-O-U-S-A, which hails from Japan and Korea. Both cousins grow to comparable sizes and shapes and combine gaudy spring flowers with red fall foliage. 4 big differences set the Kosa apart. Its flowers and foliage appear together in spring, not one after the other. It boasts handsome flaking bark. It resists diseases, and it isn't as fussy about soil. Grow it in USDA zones 4 to 8. Recommended selections include Aurora, saucer-shaped white blooms, Scarlet Fire, deep pink petals, Venus, mammoth white flowers, and Wolf Eyes, white blossoms and gray-green leaves edged in white. Look for them in garden centers and online. End of story. We are now at the conclusion of this week's Southern Living Magazine program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Leslie Hunt. Thank you for tuning in this week. Keep it tuned to Sun Sounds for more great programming. Have a great week. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. You can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones.